105.
Almost 22 minutes past two on the Lunchtime Bistro, and we're going to be talking food. John Ferris joins us, the U105 food critic. John, nice to meet you.
Hi, how are you? It's good to meet you.
I think you've the best job in the world.
Well, some might say that. I have only eaten in four of the best top 50 restaurants, so it's not too many.
That's four more than me.
Well, it did cost me a second mortgage to
I'm
do
sure
it.
But the world's 50 best restaurants has just been published, and the UK has only three, two of them headed by the same chef, Heston Blumenthal. And he's in ninth place with Heston Blumenthal's Dinner in Knightsbridge, The Fat Duck and Bray in 13th place, and Brett Graham's The Ledbury in Notting Hill is in 14th place. France, however, does much better with 7. I've just mentioned, I was having a look before you came in on the website, theworlds50best.com, where people can get more details about this. The thing is, how do you compile a list like this? Because a lot of us want to experience different things from a restaurant.
Well, the actual World's 50 Awards is judged by 287 food critics around the world, and their job is really to come up with a list of four restaurants from the country that they live in, plus three from the rest of the world. Now, it's a tough ask. I mean, the reality is you can never have a true 50 best restaurants in the world, because you would literally have people eating every day around, and their job being 365 days a year travelling from country to country. So, I mean, they're doing as best as they see they can to produce a list such as that. There is a touch of controversy over how this is come around, you know, the reality.
Why is that?
Well, the reality is that each judge has to have eaten in the restaurant that they nominate, or the seven restaurants, in the past 18 months. Now, as you know, Mayor, you could possibly afford to go to one of these places every couple of years. You know, so how anyone can afford to go to the number you would need to go to decide what the best restaurant is would be tough. So last year, Dinner by Heston, for example, was the location of the dinner after the awards last year. So all the critics who were deciding this year who the top 50 are will have eaten there, which I guess gives it a slightly unfair advantage, because it means every critic who is on the list will have eaten there, whereas a lot of the other places, you know, maybe 10, 15 of them might have eaten there, or 20 or 30, but not a great amount.
It would also help, though, surely, wouldn't it, that he's one of the best known? I mean, he's always on television.
Oh, yeah. I mean, I think it was a bit of a surprise this year that the Fat Duck dropped so far, you know, his other restaurant.
And 13th place.
Yeah, I mean, it was number one a few years ago and has sort of dropped to third and fourth place, but I think it was a surprise that it dropped so far. And that was probably because of Dinner by Heston sort of moving up and coming into the list for the first time.
I take it it's not just about the actual food, though. I mean, service and the setting must have something to do with it.
Yeah, I mean, it's the same as the Michelin Guide. I mean, Michelin say that it is just about the food, but, you know, that's a little rubbish. You know, it's the experience. I was in Noma last year, 2 days after the awards were announced, and the experience of René Redzepi, who's the head chef there, coming out to the door, greeting you, bringing you in, having a chat with you about what's going to happen over the course of three and a half hours, and the whole atmosphere. I mean, to give an example, at Noma last year, as we were sitting at the table for a couple of minutes, and one of the chefs came over and said, your first course is already on the table, and we were sort of struggling around looking to figure out what he's talking about. And it had been a small plant in the centre of the table, which we thought was just decoration, which in fact turned out to be an edible plant.
So, really?
Yeah, so I mean, there's lots of little surprises like that you don't really know about when you're going, and kind of give that shock element as well as being great food, but given that wee bit of and Heston's great at that. You know, a lot of his food is all smoke and you know, things that you really don't expect to see. I mean, he has a thing called basically a cup of tea, which when you drink one side of your mouth it's hot and the other side it's cold while you're drinking it at the same time.
Wow.
So there's lots of things like that that are just really you really wouldn't expect.
I've seen him cook, actually. It was over in London a couple of years ago. I was invited over by a friend to a recording of a television show, and he was, I think it was Paul O'Grady's show. He was the chef on it, and he technically what he did was absolutely incredible, but I don't know whether I would like to eat it too often. I think he came up with, I don't know, it was some bizarre ice cream that he came up with.
Yeah, he comes up with a lot of crazy things, and most people, I mean, my wife said she did, well, I told my wife she wouldn't like it, so she didn't go with me, and then when I'd finished the meal, I kind of thought actually she would like have liked pretty much everything. I mean, there's things like snail porridge on the menu and stuff like that that most people maybe turn their nose up at and go, well, I'm not sure about that, but it was probably one of the tastiest things I've ever eaten. And I mean, Noma again, you know, one of the dishes on the menu is a live prawn. It's not for everybody. It might get animal activists up in arms, and it might have people sitting looking at it thinking, I'm not going to try that. But it's a great experience to eat something like that and taste something.
You've tried this, haven't you?
Yeah, I tried it last year. One of the chefs had told us that the range of emotions from people sort of goes from the likes of ourselves, who kind of just went gung-ho and bit the head off before it kept wriggling in your mouth, to people who sit for 25 minutes just staring at it, not sure what to do, and other people insist that it's brought away immediately. So, you know, there's things like that on menus, on places like this, that, you know, you really just don't expect to see, or you would never try again, probably, or would never get the chance to try.
Yeah, I think I would like to try it once or twice, one of the world's best restaurants. You think people, I mean, you go to this website, there are comments underneath, as there always are with websites, and the comments you see most often from the public, people saying, oh, it takes itself too seriously, this list. And a lot of people saying, I'm kind of put off by the pretentiousness of it. Do you understand?
Well, yeah, I mean, that's what people think, and that's part of the problem Michelin has. You know, people think that it's something that you go in and you're kind of, you have to be quiet and you can't enjoy yourself. I mean, the Fat Duck, we had people coming over from other tables asking us do we want their picture taken when certain dishes were coming out and things like that. And it's a very, in the four places I've eaten in anyway on that list, it's been a very casual attitude in all of them. And not something, I mean, I did the Fat Duck thinking that would be me, you know, broke the bank going over and thing and that's it. But it gives you the bug that it kind of makes you realise that these trips, they may be once in a lifetime for people, but they're great experiences if you're in the food.
The thing is, as well, is they don't have to be super expensive. I mean, surely over the last couple of years, people have kind of, they haven't got a lot of spare cash. People have turned away from the really expensive restaurants and you see a lot of these sort of fairly simple, low-key restaurants that still serve incredible food. And those are the ones now that surely that are much more popular.
Well, there's Michelin star restaurants, or 2 and 3 Michelin star restaurants in China, for example, where a meal would cost you less than £10. You know, so
really,
the reality is that places like Michelin and the world's 50 best have to move on and accept that people maybe don't have the kind of money that they used to have, you know, to afford these kind of things. So things have to be a bit cheaper. I mean, next week when we go to El Celler de Can Roca, which is the second best on the world's 50 list, I mean, we're going to Spain for 2 nights, flights, accommodation, meal and wine pounds, and all that's coming to £600. I mean, it's not a kick in the arse off what a weekend's break would be to Spain, you know. So for someone like myself who loves food, you know, that for me is probably reasonable value. I mean, it's not something I'd like to do a lot, but, you know, I would expect to spend £400 to go to Spain for a weekend, you know, just on a general sort of weekend break trip. So, you know, to throw in a meal in one of the best restaurants in the world, which is 16 or 17 courses with wine pairings with that, for someone who's in the food, that's pretty good value for me.
I have to ask you, one of the things that I mentioned to you when you first came in the studio here, is there any sort of list like this for Northern Ireland? There isn't, you said, but we do have some amazing restaurants, some amazing chefs here.
Yeah, I think, tourism, food tourism is a big thing in Europe, and I'm glad to say that over the last couple of years, I think I'd be happy to tell people to come to Northern Ireland and eat here. 5 years ago, I wouldn't have been, because you could have maybe pointed to one or two places that you could tell people to eat in. I think these days we've probably got 7 or 8 top restaurants which would stand up against most places in England. I mean, I was in Michael Dean's place upstairs a few weeks ago. He doesn't have his Michelin star anymore, but some of the best food he's cooking for years is coming out up there, and very reasonably priced compared to a normal meal out in Belfast, you know. So I think there's plenty of places now that would entice people to come to Belfast and Northern Ireland to eat. Chris Bell, for example, down in Galgorm's doing great stuff, and could potentially next year be in line for a Michelin star. So I think we've got to the point now that we have lots of great restaurants that could stand up to most places in Europe anyway. Might not make the top 50 restaurants in the world, but for a small place like here, I think we're doing well now.
What I'm going to do is, I see the boss in there, I think I might go in and suggest that we do an outside broadcast from each of the top 50 restaurants. He's looking in at me. No chance, he says. Well, I think that's a very good idea.
If you want to come along, we've got a couple of spaces left for next week. So if he wants to fund you to come, then we'll get you sorted afterwards.
I think I already know the answer to that.
So do I.
John Ferris, thank you very much. Lovely to talk to you. By the way, when you've come back from your trip to the world's second best restaurant, you'll have to tell us how it goes.
I will indeed.
Follow us on Facebook or tweet us a message at U105 Radio. U105.